You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, ghetto. You're out there floating on your own. Streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Ghetto people, what are you gonna do? Tell me,
what you really want inside can You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping too the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't and it had to be done, it better get done. It will get done because you'll do it. That's right. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, just go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on podcast programs, the drop down. The first thing you'll see is African Perspectives. Click on that. There will be programs that are dated and titled, thanks to my good brother, Brother Quake, who appreciate you. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. I'm not going to go through all of it, but of course, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement with Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. On Fridays at 8 p.m. on Fridays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday from 7 to 9, the Council, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. And on Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Let us get off into the Enya Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. November 3rd. What has this world come to when the sun can no longer warm God's creatures? Without the sun's warmth, there is only ice, cold, frigid, hard, ungiving, deadly ice. Literally without its life-giving gift, this planet's surface would be no more than a vast monochrome field of ice. Figuratively, when assessed socially and culturally and not through the eyes of physical science, it already is. The Earth's crust is ruled by a mind forsaken by love and life, therefore bereft of warmth. As such, it is a collective mind frozen in an angry hatred of what it can never hope to be. Ice is ice, and because that living anger has forced us to abide under its sunless domination, the spirit of Ra has been removed from our lives. This lack of divine energy has severely obstructed our spirit's ability to generate the warmth we need to be African, to be human. Moreover, because it has been cold for so long, we have allowed ourselves to give up on this natural warmth. To rationalize this, we have even come to see the progressive decline in the planetary warmth as our normal state of existence. We have defended survival and success in terms of our ability to adapt to the kind of insanity that only the cold can bring so well. It has caused us to turn from our spiritual fullness, warmth, and comfort of Ma'at, even blaming it for our falling temperatures and not us for having turned our eyes from its light. In fact, most of us are no longer
superficially reacting to the ICE effort to pressure us into it. They have sunk so far beneath the glacier's surface, they no longer want to feel what it means to be warm human beings. They have become one with the cold. They can no longer remember that the sun must effectively shine in order to keep the cold at bay. Affirm, I can still see and feel the sun. Ashe, I can still see and feel the sun. November 4th. Until the killing of black men, black mothers and sons becomes as important as killing of white men, white mothers' sons, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. Ella Baker. Until we are consciously aware of who we are through the eyes of our ancestors, fully endowed with no longer under Yoruba's domination, culturally and socially, politically, politically, economically, educationally, spiritually, and militarily, and fully vested in our sovereignty. Let me read that again. And fully vested in our sovereignty, this will never occur. Until then, we will continue to witness the genocidal movement against African people through the blatant killing of our men, women, sons, and daughters. Clearly, we will not be resting for quite a while. Knowing this, at this point in time, and until this issue has been permanently resolved to our advantage, we must think matter of factly as a nation at war. In the spirit of Ma'at, we wish for our enemies only that which they wish for us, no more, no less. And for all of our centered, empowered, resilient, humble, dedicated, studied, and uncompromising, accountable warriors working on our front lines for justice and sovereignty, we will always wish nothing less than protection, peace, and healing. For victory is already ours. Ashe. Affirm, I will never be at rest without justice. Ashe. I will never be at rest without justice. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. Brothers and sisters, once again, we are honored. We are pleased and pleasured and happy to have our brother Mwalimu Baruti as our guest. Baba Baruti, good morning.
Good morning, Baba Oshi. And it's interesting, I'm sitting here thinking as you're talking, and it's like every time that I'm on, it's like I've never heard this before. It's like brand new. And I keep telling people you have no idea, but no, you have no idea how inspiring just this introduction is. It reminds me of Yikir Arma's introduction to 2000 Seasons.
Yeah.
Where, of course, it's important to read the book,
right?
But you could read that and be set for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So it's always good to be here. I, of course, apologize a zillion times over.
Never.
You know,
never need to, dear brother,
because
things happen,
know.
Man. I hear you.
Yeah.
Never need to, because I know.
It's always good to be on here, and if it makes it any better, this is the only program that I'm consistently, come on.
Well, that's I'm truly honored.
It means that much to me. It means that much to us.
Right on. I say it means.
Well, Indiana's happy that I'm on as well.
I can't tell you what it means for me in this program, and I've been on. I've been on now for 10 years since I've been here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brother. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah, brother Kwaku told me, man, you done did about 600, 700 shows, programs.
Oh,
I said, wow, that's content.
You have them all archived, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
That's content. Yeah.
No excuses.
Yeah.
I missed the first 10 years. Well, here it is.
Well, you know, and I always think about when I first met you in Milwaukee and you know, through Queenie Fama, and may God be pleased with her. My good friend, Queenie
Absolutely.
Fama.
Absolutely.
Yep. And you did a presentation at the African-American Women's Center on the feminization of the African male, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that book that, that came out, The Effeminization, which is very real and very serious. We need to take that, you know, because it's still very much in effect.
I still remember. I enjoyed myself immensely.
Yeah.
And again, one of those absolutes. If as far as my memory is telling me, that was the best, most enjoyable presentation of that discussion, the effeminization of African males that I've ever done.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you're talking to an audience and everybody is clear, and they just want to hear how you say what you say, that's probably the most comfortable position a speaker can be in.
I say, yeah, it was great, man. And then, of course, when I moved here and surprised you at the shrine, I think we're doing Kwanzaa.
Yes. Where did you come from?
Yeah, Milt. I'm here now, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was good. And, of course, ever since then, you know, we get to see you on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I come through and here and there within, because we're literally neighbors because I live right down the street from you.
Yes.
That's right.
So it's good. You're talking about building community, building village and a village structure, and people were talking about in Atlanta. Well, there, you know, there's a quote unquote conscious community there here, but within that conscious community, which we've talked about before, you have that center community where character is like the overriding measuring rod, and there is a group of us, if you will. You don't know, we're not bragging. We're just talking about what we do and what we've aspired to be and become as examples of our ancestors in this center community here in Atlanta. If your character is not right, you're not part of it.
That's right. I say, that's right.
You know, you're not included. If I see you, I might speak, but that's going to be the extent of it. But we don't just speak. We have conversations.
That's right.
You know, so it's and you've added to it. You've been here. How many years you've been here, but you've been here. Added to what existed. You strengthened it.
Well, I appreciate that, and I also appreciate Baba Kelsey, you know, because Baba Kelsey, who is truly an esteemed elder, esteemed elder, and he said, I've seen you in the community, and what you have been is consistent. I felt that was just a high compliment because, you know, some people be, you know, they doing this, they saying that, they saying a lot of stuff, but he said, I seen you and I seen what you've done and you've been consistent, man. And I was very honored by that, you know, coming from Baba Kelsey, an esteemed elder.
I appreciate that. I know that you do. We all, you know, we appreciate each other.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of a lonely place to be walking that narrow path.
Yeah.
By yourself, not knowing that there are other people out there walking the narrow path too, and they are your, of course, they're not your competition. They're the measuring rod.
Right.
Again, that measuring rod.
Right. They're the examples. You know, we're in this together. And the interesting thing about that, Baba Baruti, is that, you know, our communities of serious consciousness in these major cities, unfortunately, are small. You know, and because what we talk about, what we aspire to, what we want to do is against what America is about.
Absolutely.
You know, we ain't talking about voting.
Right.
We're talking about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty.
That's our politics.
That's it. That's our politics. Because the motto of this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And that's the bottom line. And everything else is moot, but you got to live. You just, there's the mundane things you do. So you live, you got to work, you got to pay bills, and so forth and so on. But in the real forefront of your mind, not the back, in the forefront of your mind is our liberation. Our self-determination, always our sovereignty. I visualize that and what it could be and what it would look like, you know. And that's why people talk about, well, you ain't going to move to Africa. Yeah, I am. Yes, I am. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm over 70 years old, Baba, you know.
Right.
And I And I've often said this, and I've given my daughters explicit instructions that if okay. something does befall me and I perish here, cremate mm-hmm. me, put my ashes in a urn, an urn, and then give me over to Africa.
We have given the same instructions.
Yep. Really? See, I'm telling you, I don't want to be buried here. I don't want to be buried here. I want
right,
to go
absolutely
home.
Absolutely not. And that's the main reason.
Yeah.
I've said that Enya knows, our daughter knows, that if I go, do not bury me in this place.
That's right. Don't do it. I'll haunt your ass.
I will come back on that one.
That's right.
I will come back too, Bob.
I'll be determined.
Yeah. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like what you were just saying. I'm thinking years ago when I was realizing that I was African and moving in that direction, I'm reading people who are saying what I'm already thinking, and of course that like minds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when you said that, I didn't. There was no wide eye on my look on my face because you know you said that. I would expect that from you. You know,
yeah.
That to me is a critical point in our focus. I want to go home.
I want to go home.
Yeah, I want to go home.
I mean, and then lately with some encouragement of what's happening with Burkina Faso, Mali, mm-hmm. and Niger, what's happening there mm-hmm. is some encouragement, you know,
okay.
and what they're trying to do, and what they have done, you know. Mm-hmm. It should be a collaboration. That's why the Pan-African Federalist Movement, what Mama Nubantu and Brother Wally moved down in, where's he at? I think it's in New York.
Mama Nabantu is one of our hardest workers, man.
Yeah, yes, she is, man. Yes, she. Did you get a chance to go to the Collard Green Festival at all?
No, we haven't been for years because something has always come up. We went to two of them.
Okay.
And it's real laid back.
Yeah. Oh, it was very nice this year.
We enjoyed ourselves thoroughly. You want to be with a bunch of people, you can be with a bunch of people. If you just want to sit in the bleachers or a chair someplace and just observe everybody, you know, it's like that.
It is. It's great. And even though this venue was at the church and held out in front of the church, and mm-hmm. But we have parking and so forth. Last mm-hmm. year, it was on somebody's land.
Okay.
In Snellville, I think it was.
This isn't where Baka Sim was at. It's somebody else's land?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so that was great because we had water and horseback riding for the young
people. Oh, wow.
Hills. Yeah. Yeah.
I really missed that one.
Yeah. So, you know,
great. The grandchildren would have.
Yeah. That'd been great. You know?
Yeah.
And then you can give them some collard green ice cream.
Ice cream? Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the Collard Green Festival. So I want to thank Mama Nubantu mm-hmm. and for the hard work that she and her daughters and all those who involved are. It turned out great. It's a beautiful day this past Saturday. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's one of those, in a way, she reminds me of Larry Obadeli Williams.
Oh, man.
She's always, even though she's at the forefront, she's behind the scenes.
Yes, right.
So most folks don't know that it's her. She
mm-hmm.
did this.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, well, she don't. Yeah.
She's one of those individuals that folks just don't know how powerful that she is. One of those people who, I wish she was my teacher when I was mm-hmm. in the fifth grade.
Yeah.
You know, that kind. You mentioned earlier, not to change the subject, but before I forget, you used that word monochrome when you were talking about Europeans and the ice in the caves. And mm-hmm. I was talking to the students last year about what kind of mentality just living in a black and white world would give you. You have no color. You compare it with African people. When even though you have over a decade on me on this planet. When I was beginning to come up, mm-hmm. most of the suits that you saw were black and most of the shirts were white.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. so it's only fairly recently that you're really beginning to see color in their world imitating our world.
Mm, right.
You know, right. We used to joke about the guy who really went too far. We call him a Christmas tree. Because he had on, every color that you could imagine. But we are, know, we say we're people of the circle. We're also people of color.
Yes. Oh, yes.
You know.
Yes.
We have always loved color. You see it, you know, well, you, everywhere in our
right,
existence.
Right. You see
it. You said that monochrome people, mm-hmm. and I say people, you know, maybe I should say menticidal folks, but a lot of people don't understand the importance of that word, and especially in how you said it, because you're making a distinction based upon view. You know, you got to imagine a whole world, a whole society where virtually everything was black and white.
Mm. Yes.
And what that, you know, does to how it hardens your thinking. You know, it adds to that xenophobia and all the rest of that. It's not, to me, it's not a happy world.
Right.
You know, versus color, you got bright, you got, you know.
Oh, yeah, you got the array. You got the full
mm-hmm,
spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some young person needs to write an essay or a book on that.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's out there now,
I'm not
family.
I'm but I'm getting close.
Yep. Well, I mean, you know, just like I always say that we as an African people, we span that mm-hmm. spectrum from bright, light, and damn near white to blue, black, all in, mm-hmm. in between. That's why, you know, they talk about talking about Kemet, and that's been a mm-hmm. battle. It's a constant, ongoing battle. And you would have thought that what Sheikh Anta Diop did and Theophile Obenga did back in 74, they wanted to debate, you know, and they laid it all out. And
yes. Yes.
And still, because of the arrogance of the Caucasian, the European, even like that asshole Dr. Zaid Awas in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't stand his ass. I'm telling you. But then now you got a bunch of Arab people who, and I make the distinction between Egypt and Kemet. That's Egypt. And those Egyptians want to claim when it was Kemet. You can't do it. And
right.
we shouldn't let them. Mm-hmm. You know, but you see just like what you've seen historically. And so even though he did it in 74, it's like he never did it because still yet and still today, you know.
Still arguing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's like Europeans are still trying to find that, and this is a little separate from that, but Europeans are still trying to find that oldest human fossil remains
right.
in Europe somewhere.
In Europe somewhere. Ain't that true?
they're still trying to find it.
Yep.
And I'm glad also it's like we say things, we use words that are important for us to understand, and the distinctions, there needs to be a distinction, clear distinction between, what the Arabs have there is Egypt. It's not Kemet.
Right.
You know, right. it is Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And what we prove, the problem, part of the problem is that we have no friends, but all of those non-friends, they spend an enormous amount of time and energy trying to blur our view.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, you know, Jean was so important that Senegal named its national university after him.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like he didn't even exist among some circles. I mean, I'll talk to black folks, you know, about him, especially with the radiocarbon dating, all the rest of this,
right.
in terms of how intelligent and strong this man
right.
was intellectually,
yeah.
and they don't know who he is. They don't know who Obenga is.
Mm-hmm. And Obenga's still living.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Man.
These were people who crushed the European idea of original anything.
Right.
They crushed the European idea about these people creating anything of intellectual value. Of course, you know, George E. James and the rest of the folks, they also did this, but it was their ability to disprove one of the greatest lies that Europeans perpetrated,
mm-hmm.
and that's that Kemet was Egypt, that it was white.
That it was white, yep.
In his greatness. And, you know, and it's like There shouldn't be any debate on that. There shouldn't be any discussion on that, except, you know, maybe to present all the ideas involved.
But see, that's the
thing. Other than that, but there should be a conversation.
It shouldn't, but it still is. Because why?
Yes.
Because how grand it was, how great it was, it can't be us. They had to be. Mm-hmm. It had to be them. It cannot
still.
Be us. See?
Mm-hmm.
See?
Still.
Still. Still. You know.
Bubba, I am, I guess I say sometimes I'm glad to be in the position where you're talking to these young folks and giving them this information,
yes.
and they are receiving it so well.
Yes.
You know, they want to know, and they've been taught by this media that same thing that we were taught, but it's just being taught in a different way. You know, you're nothing. You came from nothing. You know, there's no problem killing you because you're nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's like you can see their eyes light up when you talk about who we are and what we did. And sometimes their eyes light up in disbelief.
Yeah, because they never heard it before. They never seen it before. Yeah.
Yeah. The mental side is deep.
It is.
It's extremely deep. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that worries me in terms of where we're going, because the number of us who have joined in this bandwagon as the media, as the internet would have you, increases in, I'll say, membership, then you're having more and more people who look like us who have no sense of what it means to be African, and they're becoming major voices.
Right.
You know.
Right. And that's the thing.
I don't pay a whole lot of attention, but, you know, you have a lot of warriors who say, Baba, did you hear about this guy? Baba, did you hear about that guy? So, you know, I can't consume my time with stupidity, but you all need to know, because you're closer to the young folk, which means you're the ones that are going to have to explain, you know, this to them.
Well,
I was always also, one quick announcement, you're of course reading out of Revolutionary Thoughts. There should be a volume 3 by fall of next year.
Really outstanding, because I've been reading them both volumes every day on this program, brother.
Yes.
For the last since it came out, when volume 1 came out, then volume 2, now volume 3. Can't wait for it because a lot of good wisdom. In fact, what I do is when I miss a program or two or three or whatever the case may be, I go back, because they're great. They're very thought-provoking. Your narrative is outstanding. The quote by one of our brothers or sisters is just on point. And, you know, and it's a good way to start the program, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to start the program, man. So,
well, that's really, and I might have talked to you about this before, but that's really how they started. You know, when we were in grad school, I was teaching at Chicago State. And I'm pretty sure I said this before, but most of the students in the class were like, almost be like an aunt or something like that. And most of the students in my classes were women. And you start talking about our story, you start talking about our important figures, it's like they don't want to leave the class.
Yeah.
So I started, it was very accidental. We started putting quotes on the wall, on the blackboard by, you know, it would be related to whatever the lecture was or whatever the discussion was. And then I noticed, okay, I've been doing this for 2 years, get to Morehouse, you know, doing it more for all of those years, and ran into this sister who was a Clark Atlanta student in the Madu bookstore. And she recognized me, and she said, you know, I'm trying to find these Kwanzaa gifts, and I see daily thoughts for, you know, religious folks, for Negroes, all the rest of it, but I don't see anything for revolutionary
soldiers.
Yeah.
Oh,
so that led
that's
to
how
the,
that right, I'll say.
Yeah, that led to the putting together of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, you do this program because of a need in the community. That book came into existence. Volume 1 came into existence, and it was very well received.
Yeah.
It's been very well received. And these are, you know, these are the words of our, to me, our greatest minds.
Yes.
Our most revolutionary minds.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be, you know, records of them, just like your programs need to be archived and available for people who want to know and want to think.
Yes, they are.
These words need to be, before they do like they are trying to do with Zoc, with Diop, erase it. Erase these words.
Right.
Erase
these
names. Erase these people.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can't allow that
to
happen.
Was, yeah, because he was so strong, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And like I said, he won the debate.
He
came away from there with having UNESCO and other agencies and saying yes. Because he was, him and Obinga were the only two Africans at the table for the debate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Cleared
so they
up.
Had
Hands
to.
Down.
Yep. Because you know, everybody else, all the Egyptologists. And like I said, I make a distinction, a clear distinction. Because it is. Because the Egyptologist is one who's trying to maintain the lies that have been perpetrated since the Greeks and Romans and Arabs and everybody else came into Kemet.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, this was a civilization of, I mean, immense grandeur. I mean, serious.
Right.
So it's us. That's the thing. Because what they wanted to do, consistently put into our minds that we ain't never been nothing but a slave.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Slave.
Yeah.
You said it.
You know, and that's
not
why.
Not a slave, but a slave. And
right.
We loved it.
Right. You know?
You know.
So, yeah.
So I remember when I first, quote unquote, discovered his writings and did a little more digging. And, you know, came to find out, of course, you already know, but it came to find out this man did two dissertations. You know, the first dissertation, which, of course, was his African Origin of Civilization, and they wouldn't accept it.
Right.
They wouldn't accept it as his dissertation. They wouldn't accept it. So this man, and I'm in the process of writing my dissertation because, so, you know, I know what is involved in that. And this man said, okay, I'm getting my doctorate because I need it for whatever he thought he needed it for. So they didn't accept that. He goes and writes, you know, another book, Pre-Colonial Black Africa, and they accept that. So, it's like he wrote two dissertations.
Yeah, and he kept coming with more information and more information, factual information that they could dare not dispute, and they had to relent.
Right, because his evidence was so, I mean, people like him, Bois, Dubois, whatever issues he may have had, and he had some issues.
Right.
You know, he's like considered the father of black sociology in the country, so of course I had to study him a lot. But those two individuals really led me to write in such a way that there's so much evidence that you can't argue with me on this.
Well, those two men are considered multi-geniuses. And two of the most intelligent people of the last century. And I ain't talking about for us. I'm talking about period.
Period, yeah.
Man.
I said Du Bois, you know, that the first sociological study in this country was done by Du Bois.
Yeah.
You know, created the sociology department. What was it Atlanta University? I forget. I believe it was Atlanta University at the time, or Atlanta, whatever. But these are minds that set a standard. And so much that I'm seeing today falls way below, you know, that standard in so many ways. And maybe you could say, you know, only one or two people like that come along a century.
Yeah, well.
One or two of those people, not just one or two of those Africans, one or two of those people, because they don't have any competition.
Right. Well, I tell you, to me, when I think about, my thinking and my rationalization and how I view things and my vision for us as a people, I think of Jop as, because he made it clear. I mean, I read all the other ones. I mean, I've immersed myself in, especially when I was a firefighter, I had the opportunity to do a lot of reading at the firehouse and on my off days. And so, I fell in love with being African. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that it was just like when we have Kwanzaa, you know, when you talk about Kujichagulia. Well, you know,
right.
I thought that was important for me to change my name. You
right,
know?
Right.
I felt, and in fact, I took it to the next level. I had it done legally, you know, mm-hmm. to change mm-hmm. my name. You know, I thought it was important mm-hmm. to wear African clothes. Because when you look at our situation and you see the continent for all the beauty that it has been plundered and raped and pillaged for hundreds of years, and yet it still has more resources than anywhere else on the planet. And if you develop the mindset of loving yourself and loving each other and get others to understand that, now you're starting to work together. We can kick them crackers out. We can kick them Arabs out. We can kick the Koreans and Chinese out. Everything that we need to do. I mean, you know, when I went to Ghana a few years ago, and I noticed they had a road from Tamale to Moli Park. They used to have a road, and it was so bumpy, and it's almost like, you know, when you are traveling to the airport and whatever, and you feel those bumps to let you know it's slow down. It was like that for the whole trip. You know, but now it's paved. But interesting, well, let me tell you what's even deeper. There's another road that the Chinese paved for and built a thing for themselves. You know?
And we're trying to pretend that they're doing it for us.
Right.
You see the same thing in the islands. Mm-hmm. The Chinese are constructing roads, you know, all over the place. And we're thinking that they're doing this for us, and we're celebrating it because it's taking away the bumpiness, but we're losing who we are. We're losing control over the economy. Right. We're losing control over our direction by allowing people to come in. And that's just like spoiled child, in a sense, where you lose your or never gain your self-discipline. You never gain the inner strength that you need because everything is being done for you, and you're misguided into thinking that, you know, you're actually doing this, or you're part of this, or this doesn't entail any control by other people. Mm-hmm. And it does. The scholarship, it's like we it, to me, it's very much like Bob, if you were contributing to, which you are, but if you were contributing to the operation of Ackerman Institute, then there is a part of Ackerman Institute that you control. There's a piece of that you control. Okay. That can be, you know, in our case, it's positive,
right.
Positive control or positive assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not paying attention because it's like we've been without for so long and of the mindset that we can't do this ourselves, that when someone else comes in and does it, we're, like, grateful.
Yeah. I mean, and what's deep about that is this, like, we had a convention in the Bahamas, and the Chinese were building a huge resort next about a couple blocks from the resort where we stayed at. And the thing about the Chinese, they don't want any local people working.
Yes.
The Chinese say, well, okay, we'll do it, but it's only us.
I saw that in Jamaica.
Yeah. See? Because that's what it was there. That's what it was on the continent. But, you know, they have, in fact, what was told to me, they brought prisoners out of China to help do the manual labor, and then the other technicians. And what was interesting, they had an issue right before I came to that convention with the Chinese, with management, something about not with the people who were workers, but the management, so the work would slow down. So I had a chance, as I drove through that on that street, to look at the place. It's huge, another huge resort, but also, too, what the Chinese were doing. And my contention is that whatever anybody can do, we can do. You know,
and do better.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We can build these roads, highways, and that's what Africa needs. We need highways, ports, railroads, infrastructure, schools, hospitals. Now, if y'all ask want to build a church or a mosque, you go ahead.
Yeah, but I'm talking different there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. What that does to you psychologically, socially, culturally, all the rest, financially, mm-hmm. economically, you know, what the doing stuff for yourself, what it does to you, to your mind, your vision, your ability to know, it's the same for me. Again, looking at children, it's the same. When I was, you know, in the 11, 12 years of age, when you got a model, you got a model that you had to essentially put together from scratch. Mm-hmm. You had some wheels in there. You had your choice of hubcaps. You had, you know, your choice of engine, how you wanted to do it, the hood on. You had to put some thought into making this model from these plastic pieces that you had to break away from the, whatever was holding them together.
Right. And I remember that. Yeah.
You just get the car.
Mm-hmm.
So the thinking, the self-discipline, the pride that you take from having to build it yourself, not even talk about the pride, you know, the happiness you get from playing with it, but the pride and the discipline that you get from having to build this thing yourself,
yes.
We're not getting that anymore. That's not getting passed on.
No.
It's that personal development. But what is getting passed on is other people doing it for you and you pretending or really believing that this is your work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that point reminds me very much of when we were at Morehouse, and I was teaching a class, and this student was doing, it was a composition class, and the student was doing pretty bad. He was probably about a D plus C minus student. He just couldn't write well, and his final paper, in order for him to pass the class, because he was sitting on, I believe, like a F plus or D minus, heading into his the last weeks of class, and of course he had to pass the class in order to graduate. So NEI received a paper from him which was outstanding, and she used her knowledge of the English language, et cetera, to bleed on that paper a little bit. So that he ended up with a C, but it was a C minus, and he couldn't use that class because she wasn't going to. She knew that wasn't his real work, or something was wrong. So she's in her office, turning in her grades, and she gets a call from his mother. And his mother, of course, is extremely upset because her son is not going to graduate because he didn't do his work. And she's telling him, "Well, I know it was a good paper because I." And she caught herself. So I'm sitting there looking, looking at this idea. I came home fuming, but I'm sitting there looking at this idea. How many of our children today, they are accepting other people's work or expect other people to do their work, but somehow and to rise successfully in this world, but they're going to be coming in competition with people who had to do the work.
Right. Exactly.
We have to actually do the work. And when you bring that up, and surprisingly, when you bring that up to teachers, they get upset with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
If we're supposed to be seven generations people, then, or as I tell the students, if you're supposed to be the future, and you are, but if you're supposed to be the future and this is what you're willing to do, I have to convince you to want to think. I have to convince you to want to learn, then what kind of future are we going to have?
that
to me is so beyond scary. And I know this isn't a discussion about education, but I've seen the change over the last 30 years. And, I saw it in coming, but I saw the change over the last 30 years where you went from, and we can even go back a century where we were dying to learn anything.
Right.
It didn't
right.
make a difference. We
that's
understood.
Right.
So you learn stuff to be learning it.
Yeah, it's a commitment.
So you know. But over the last 30 years, I've seen that kind of curiosity not die, but it's on its deathbed.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is supposed to be our future, and this is so scary to me, and we're promoting it and fighting anybody who's trying to push the idea of thinking over just rote memorization.
Mm-hmm. And regurgitation.
Yes. Yes, meditation.
Yeah.
When we were in school, and I said, I know you got a decade plus on me, but when we were in school, the smartest person in the class was the one who could think best, could take, the teacher would put out two ideas or whatever, and that person would come up with some kind of synthesis and thinking on that. Today, the smartest person in the class is the one with the best memory.
That's right. The best
so
memory.
Where is that leading us? What is that going to take us in terms of power, in terms of independence, in terms of just the very idea of Pan-Africanism, sovereignty? You know, if you don't have the power or the ability to think independent of
your system,
oppressor.
Of this system, yes.
how can you build anything for us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the builder's work is, reflected in their work, what they produce. You see the quality of the mind, the quality of the skills of the builder in whatever it is that they build. And I'm not a pessimist at all.
I am not either. You know, that's interesting, man, because I'm not either, brother. And even though I come on this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, and the things that I say will make a person feel that way, but I'm not. I'm just pointing out all of the challenges that we as a people have to have. But I'm seriously optimistic. You know?
Yes.
We were the first people.
Well, you wouldn't be on here.
No, exactly.
You'd be wasting your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think anybody's handing you that $1 million check every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So, I mean, why would you be wasting your time here if you didn't believe that we've already won? I forget who said that the revolutionary loves his people more than anybody else, because who would fight so hard for people who hate him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like you're the vast majority of people, vast majority of our people in this country and the world would fire you. They would dismiss you. They would assist in your destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you mentioned earlier at the introduction, what we do goes completely and totally against the grain.
Right.
So most of the people who who you're fighting for would welcome your destruction, and you're fighting for them.
Right.
Doing this work for them. You know, they're not just doing this work for Africans in the center community or the larger conscious community. You're fighting for all
African
people.
Sovereignty
is a people's position.
Right. Exactly.
You know.
And I don't dismiss anybody, but I mean, if it's if it's time to go and you don't go, that's on you. But if it's time to go, let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you issue the warning, some will survive. And you're issuing the warning multiple times every week, every year for like 10 years. And this isn't like praising Baba Oshie Day, but this is what you've been doing for the last 10 years, issuing the warning. Mm-hmm. That's not pessimistic. You know, if you didn't believe that there was a possibility for African people, then why would you waste your breath?
Exactly. I'll just go ahead and surrender myself to Urugu and be happy with little trinkets and stuff that they give you. You know.
Yes. And this is work.
Mm-hmm.
This is not play. This is absolute work. You said, why would you waste your energy, your time, your money, your you know, there's a lot of thinking involved in this. That's work. You know, just go down and grab that 40 and get you a couple lines of coke and head to the club.
Yep.
You know, why waste your time? Why set up your children for failure by teaching them who they actually are when you know that we're going to lose anyway?
Mm-hmm.
You know. So we know better. So we're the complete and total opposite of being pessimistic. You know, we're true believers. I believe in my ancestors. I believe in who we are. I don't think there's anything better for us than who we are. And the worst thing that we're doing is accepting others' idea of what it means to be civilized, what it means to be human, or their version of it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And adopting that as, our shining star, our North Star. That's where we need to be going. That's what we need to be praising.
That's right.
Oh, and I also wanted to say, and I know you always ask about things that are going on, but I wanted to remind everybody, and I'm very sure that you'll probably be there, Baba. Kate Buka's on the 16th of this month.
No doubt about it. In fact, you know, this is the spirit. I have it right here on my other computer for you to talk about after we come back from this break. That and so much more that you guys are doing. And believe me, man, without
this is a
you,
very special one.
Yeah, is it? Oh, I'll be there.
It's a very special one. I forget which one it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the 20th or what have you, but this is special because this is the last one that I'll be giving the entire lecture myself.
This is the 19th.
Okay. Next year, I'll be doing half of the lecture, and the person who we're bringing in to continue this tradition is going to do half of the lecture, and then 2 years from now, she's going to do the entire lecture herself. This year, she's responsible for, she'll be responsible for the children, organizing the positions, getting them ready for all of that.
Beautiful.
We started thinking about that because two years ago, I did the whole thing, and it took me out for a while. But I also started thinking about people over the years talking about a lot of our institutions, organizations, activities dying because the person who is in charge or the person who's doing it, you know, they get older, but they don't
succession planning. Succession planning.
Pass it on.
Yes. Succession planning, brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And that happens because some of the people, they feel it's their thing. And they don't want to show nobody. They don't want to elevate anybody. Please, man. Please, family. For it to continue on. And even, hopefully, when you instruct that individual and help and show that person, takes it to even another level, a higher level. You know? That's no thing on you. That's what has to happen for us. Listen, I'm going to take a break. We come back from the break. We're going to have to take some questions. A bunch of people are here in the queue. And so we'll open up the phone lines. But first, when I come back, we'll talk about Kibuka and other things that are happening, you know, programs and so forth, the healing rituals and those kinds of things that are happening. So when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines and make that happen. I'm going to do a Quincy Jones piece here. You know, Quincy Jones died yesterday, and this is if I ever lose this heaven. If I ever lose this heaven, I want to play a few other pieces, but I'm gonna play this one. If I ever lose this heaven, so brothers and sisters, we'll be right back. You stay with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on TimeForAnAwakening.com and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Bye.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk Radio Network.com.
Let me get this back together again here. Fly me to the moon. The time we come together in front of LA, doing appearance. Sandwiches prepared by his chef all the way to Boston. I mean, all the way from LA to Boston.
All right. Okay. We're back. And mute that individual right quick. Probably didn't know it's beaming that strong. Of course, we're talking with Baba Barudi, Baba Mwalimu Barudi. And it's always an honor and a pleasure to have him on our program here. And, you know, and whatever time that he can give is truly appreciated, believe me. So, Brother Baba, we got the Kabuka coming up Saturday, the 16th. And where's it going to be?
It's gonna be at the House of Ogun.
Oh,
which is a,
okay.
Yeah, a space that's owned by a sister.
Yeah, I haven't been there. That's where's that at?
That's wow. Let me. I gotta pull up this flyer. We've been there a few times.
Okay.
Yeah,
I haven't.
It is in Union City.
Union City. That's what I think. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's got, you know, nice. Homely type space.
Beautiful.
In there. Yeah. So we're looking for, and not just, we of course missed the larger sweet spot. Mama, AJ hasn't gone anywhere, but she's in a different space, and we need a larger space for this. So this other sister we've known for a long time, she's doing it at her spot.
Oh, good. That's good. I mean, we were jammed a sweet spot, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
We did.
Yeah, we jammed a sweet spot. The House of Ogun is 4720 Bryce Drive in Union City, Georgia, 30291. And, of course, the Kibuka.
Oh, it's also going to be online.
Okay. So you can access the program both online and in person. The House of Ogun, that is Saturday, November 16th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Donation is families, $35 for family, $25 for a couple, adults 15, single adults 15, 18 and up, and children $5. Yeah.
We're looking for, you know, the family being here.
Sure.
this is a long, like I said, like you said, it's the 19th.
Yeah.
That we've done. And I remember when there were five adults there, you know, five children. And, you know, we've had years where there were 70, 80 children from all over.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you have the children reenacting, you know, the mm-hmm. coffer lines, you have them in the hull of the ship and so forth. It's deep and it's emotional.
Mm-hmm.
It really
mm-hmm.
is, you know.
Yeah.
It is deep. You know,
I did it in D.C. I've done it in D.C. and in Richmond. In both cases, the outcome was very similar. I did it in D.C. and I'm in the middle of talking about the positions, and this sister, I guess at the top of her lungs, she screamed and she started crying. I didn't know what to do, but mm-hmm. I knew what she was feeling.
Yeah, right.
You know,
Baba
Obadeli, Larry Obadeli Williams, he warned people. He was people not to read it at night, which, you know, I clearly understand that as well. And that was another thing about Larry Obadeli Williams. He found out that I was writing K-Book. I don't know why I didn't tell him, but he found out that I was writing it, and he comes to the door with a suitcase and a grocery store shopping cart full of books and magazines.
Yeah, man.
Maps.
That's Baba.
Yes.
Yeah, when he made his transition, I went by there with Mama Marimba and all of us to help organize his stuff and put his stuff mm-hmm. up, you know. And,
After you guys went, Mama Rumba came by the house and she brought this wooden ankh. I guess it sits like maybe almost 3 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And she comes to the door and she says, well, you know, when I saw this, I thought of you because, you know, you do some woodwork and this would uh-huh. be a good place for it to be. And I looked at it, I said, I made that for Baba. that was one of the three ankhs that we made. We did three Ankhabent awards.
Okay.
For people who were doing the work, but people really didn't know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now sitting in the house here waiting for a good spot yeah. for it to be.
I say, beautiful. Yeah. And so not only do we have Kibuka family, we also have the healing event, and that's mm-hmm. going to be in January, Saturday, mm-hmm. January 25th, from 2 mm-hmm. p.m. to 5 p.m. at the House of Ogun, once again, 4720 Bryce Drive in Union City, Georgia, 30291. $50 a couple and $30 for individuals.
Last year went beautifully, Bob.
Did it?
This year's beautiful. This year was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised. I wasn't, you know, very optimistic in terms of turnout,
mm-hmm.
but folks came.
Right on, Ashe. Beautiful.
Yeah, folks came.
Mm-hmm. And how you access these brothers and sisters, but this healing event will be open to African men and women 25 and older. It will allow African women as a group and African men as a group to acknowledge the pain that we have inflicted upon and receive from each other and ask for forgiveness and release our pain and recommit ourselves to each other. Any drummers are asked, if you're a drummer, bring your drums. The healing ritual will be early in the program, so be timely in your arrival, brothers and sisters, please. Be there on time.
Yes.
There will be an African marketplace with healthy food, drinks, and other products and services beneficial to mental and physical and emotional and spiritual health. And, of course, for those who want to participate in the event, you can send the money. You choose to make a payment. You can go to PayPal at yahbaruti@yahoo.com or Cash App, $Yah, YAA, the letter M, and then Baruti, BARUTI. So, yeah. Also, too, you can Zelle. So all kinds of ways. There's all kinds of ways that you can get your money. So just put in the pertinent information, healing event, your name, and name of your friend or your sister friend. You know, both of your names and your email address so they can send you the confirmation because it's also be online. Yeah, that's the thing. How has it been going with the students online?
It's going good. We, of course, always use more, mm-hmm. but it's going good, and it got started, you know, as a result of the COVID mess.
Yeah.
We didn't realize the value of the internet relative to teaching because we couldn't do it here and online at the same time, but now we really realize that value. We have a boy here from in Australia. Mm. We have, you know, people in D.C., California, had a student in Germany, all over the place. So
that's the beauty of that. So if you want to get can get the number of students off the continent and in the other parts mm-hmm. Of the diaspora, you know, that that's mm-hmm. available.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love what's going on with the online education of, you know, the serious warrior scholars. Mm-hmm. They're doing very good work.
Good.
There's a brother in England who he teaches chess is like the center of what he does, but also he has this philosophy mm-hmm. section for young folk and the questions that they're asked and have to think about. Mm. That's what I'm talking about when it comes to education of our children.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching these. I'm more excited over the younger folks who are in their 20s and 30s who are starting and doing this work than, you know, what we're doing.
Right.
I think we're doing good, but when you see the initiatives at the younger ages, you smile.
Mm, I know that's right. I know that's right. Because mm-hmm. it's encouraging.
It's mm-hmm. encouraging. Yes.
You know.
Yes. So we need, like I said, a liquor store in every corner. We need an internet source or even a physical facility mm-hmm. on every corner right. in our community to educate these young folks. Mm-hmm. Instead of letting other people take them to places they don't need to go.
Right. Yeah. You know. Yeah. If we were truly in control, mm-hmm. man, if we were truly in control.
Mm-hmm. You need to, you know, you need to know who you are. I'm Amos N. Wilson, Nana Amos N. Wilson's last book. I call them by their color. And I want to say blue book, but mm-hmm. and he's got another blue book. His last book, where's not the blueprint. The last one was not issue. Oh, The Psychology of Self-Hatred and Self-Defeat. There's a lot of discussion in there about the education of our children. Of course, mm-hmm. Some of it's pulled from previous books, but
right.
this is a good place for people who want to be educators in our community at whatever level. Mm-hmm. That they need to read
that's
in
right.
terms of the mentality of the classroom.
And see, you know what? That's the thing. Mm-hmm. To me, if you're going to educate Africans, mm-hmm. African people, African students, mm-hmm. our young people, you know, mm-hmm. you need to know those African-centered educators. You need to know those African-centered authors and deep thinkers. You know,
yeah.
I ain't saying you can't go outside of that. That's cool. But at your core.
At the core,
that's who you mm-hmm. have, and that's who mm-hmm. you present to them. Then letting them mm-hmm. know this is what you need to aspire to. This is what you need to do. These are the things, you know. This is the vision for us as a people. You know, imagine yes. we would be so far along the way if we had done that. You know,
absolutely
20, 30,
well.
40 years ago. You know,
mm-hmm.
and
we're
but
still
there's
thinking Rose education. Backward,
mm-hmm.
and I say, you know, as backward in terms of us teaching our own children, because we go, you know, read their classics first. We have our children read their classics first, so mm-hmm. then maybe we'll have them read African classics, but then they're looking at the African classics through European eyes.
Right, because they've been
so
indoctrinated, like, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we do the same thing. Many of our educators do the same thing. They'll go read the literature about education, educating mm-hmm. Children through European eyes, Eurocentric interpretations, and then they'll go read the African-centered interpretation of how to educate our children through European eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's calling for a failure. That's causing
right.
Defeat. That brings us into the classroom wrong.
You know. And so, you know, what you have done at Ackerman, and what you have done for the last some years. Because, I mean, you and NEI could have stayed at Howard or Morehouse or Spelman or whatever. Y'all have made some big money by now, you know. You know, maybe you touched a few students here and there, but you chose, both of y'all chose a different path, which to me is.
Both of us were taught to go where we're needed.
Yeah.
And for folks who want to understand through my eyes, I'll say through our eyes, the African-centered and African-centered interpretation of how to educate our children and what you need to be in order to be the best educator for our children, you need to read my book, To Educate a People. Because that is like the summary of who we are, what we are supposed to be about as educators through African-centered eyes. You know, that there are a number of others. My most, the most important book to me of African-centered education is Baba Koto's, Kwame Koto's book, Nation Building. I think that's the best book on African-centered education anywhere.
That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
It's nation building.
Yes. Yes.
It's not about going along to get along. It's not about assimilation. It's not about saying that I can influence this, you know, or I just want to be a part of it and be respected and be acknowledged. No, it ain't about none of that.
You know, to me, they're synonyms. Either nation building and African education. I don't see a difference between them.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
And there are.
To me, if you're going to, you better have African-centered education if you're truly going to nation build. You know, you're not going to go through the halls of academia at Georgia State and whatever, and then come out, and now you're talking about nation building for African people after what you've been taught, you know, unless you had a miraculous transformation, you know.
Brother, it reminds me of this young man who was a student at Georgia State, and he wasn't crystal clear. He was so excited about my book, Menticide. He was all kinds of praise, and he said, "Oh, I need to get a copy," and that's how I met him. I need to get a copy because I need for my professor, who's a white guy, to read this so he'll understand. I said, they understand exactly what they're doing.
Yes, they do. There are no mistakes. It's clear. It functions the way it's supposed to function, you know. Yeah, brothers and sisters, we're with Baba Mwangemu Baruti, and if you want to,
you're not going to be an educator for us. You're using them as your guide.
Yeah,
you know. Like you said, you're not coming out of there understanding unless you have put an enormous amount of time and energy into independent study of what our educators say. You should have read Baba Hannibal. You should have read Baba Sanyika. You should have read. You should have read me. You should have read. You know, the Koto's book. You should have read everybody who's in education for us. You know, you're not going to degree to everybody. Chike Akula has some very important reading for people to do. Who are going into education.
Yeah.
Asa Hilliard.
Oh, of course.
One of our best educators.
Yes, of course, Baba.
We have it's not like, oh, I can't find any books on African centered education.
Please,
you know, there are many.
Please, there's a plethora.
Many.
Jomo
Kenyatta in Facing Mount Kenya. There's a good section in there, a good understanding of the difference between Eurocentric and African centered education. So we have the material. You know, it's a choice in what you do with your time and whether you want to be compromised or whether you're trying to create something. New, which is going to change who we are. The blueprint is there.
Right. It's for laying right there for us to pick up, open it up, and let's get down with it. Let's implement this.
Without fear. And if my memory, and I know it serves me correctly, the young ones are supposed to be the ones who walk fearlessly. They have a lesser sense of death or lesser fear of death than the older folks do. So they should be the ones who fearlessly walk to this literature and study it and use it And if what they find in the quote-unquote conscious schools or in the public school system or the private school system, if it doesn't match that, then they have the energy, the time to go build what we need.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's about.
There's nothing. The only thing stopping them is them.
Yeah. We're going to open up the phone lines. Hit star twice. There's a number of you in the queue. Hit star twice. Of course, our guest is Baba Baruti. Prolific author, man, I tell you. If you go to AkabinHouse.com, and you'll check out the many writings, the many books of Baba Baruti. Let me catch this. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's happening, Osu? What's happening, Baba Baruti?
Greetings. How you doing? Good to hear your voice again.
Same here, Baba. Listen, I know they got a lot of people holding on. I just want to ask you, what is the direction that we have to go moving forward after the dog and pony show is over tomorrow?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to do is it always has to do with definitions. We need to define politics in a particular way. Not just because we are at a disadvantaged place, but because of the fact we're African. So in our tradition, there wasn't a contradiction, of course, there shouldn't have been a personal contradiction between what you think you say and you do. So for me, over the years, I have not redefined, I've just picked up what our ancestors did. And so for me, politics is an engagement. It's not going to the polls, but the record shows, I mean, even if that's what you want to do, or that's your game, the record shows that once they're elected, they do what they want to do. And they're going to follow whoever has the money, some of them before they get elected. So if we're not the ones who finance them and put them in place, then their allegiance and their whatever they owe is not to us. That's just a basic general statement. But understanding the situation that we're in, understanding the power of politics and what politics is. You know, politics is the creation, if you will, the galvanization, the bringing together, and the exercise of power. So if we're not doing that at a personal level, we're not doing that at a group level, then we're being political for somebody else. We have to ask whose purpose, who is the politics that we're engaged in serving. So for me to eliminate that issue, just like to eliminate the issue of donations to organizations where the board of directors of the organization has, you know, two or three mansions, helicopters, planes, et cetera, off of those donations that we have given with the assumption that they're going to go into the people who need. I put money right in people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly where it's going. I know exactly what purpose it's serving. And then they can do what they want to with the money if there is a need. If they go and get a bottle of whatever from the liquor store, I can't do anything about that. I did the right thing. The same thing for me applies to politics. Politics is, you know, it's about empowering a people. So we need to actually get in there and do the work that needs to be done. So it's electoral politics, to me, mess. It's not doing anything for us. It may be soothing the wounded egos, as Nana Amos Wilson would say, of Negroes, of folks who really believe that, number one, that this is America, number two, that America loves them, that America is going to do what it needs to, while at the same time they're sweating bullets when blue lights are flashing behind them. We need to actually engage in the organizing of African people around things that serve our interests. And like you said, dog and pony show. That's exactly what's going on. And it's always the question of, well, how is this supposed to be benefiting me? How is this actually supposed to be benefiting African people? And can I do better in terms of empowering African people or helping African people empower themselves? So, I mean, I voted once in my life, and that was when Harold Washington ran for
Chicago,
mayor
of Chicago, yeah.
And when he ran, he lived like 2.5 blocks away from us. So we, not only in the news and in the community, we saw him at work. He and his fiancée, his girlfriend, we saw him at work.
Right on.
Actually, you know, and he wasn't out there for a photo op. Okay, we're gonna we gotta do this neighborhood garden. He's out there doing the garden, and it's not just for that one time. We saw him at work. We listened to what he said. But that's the only time that I've ever voted, because that was very much in line with my definition of politics and your involvement and commitment to, you know, empowering African people. Mm-hmm. That was the only place that I saw that. Atlanta, of course, is the clown show.
Mm.
So if you're not hands-on, if you're not holding the person who elected accountable for what they said that they were going to do, and you can make your pressure do what it's supposed to do, then, I mean, why am I going to waste my time being involved in something in this silliness now? Okay, I get threatened by my relatives knowing whether I voted or not.
Right.
This is online. It's like that's super clown stuff. Okay, you don't vote, then we're gonna let your mommy know. You know, that level of seriousness, and people are taking that seriously. So I don't involve myself. I'm fully involved in politics. I'm just not involved in electoral
politics.
I'm fully
exactly.
involved in any kind of politics that empower
yeah.
African people.
Right on. That's right.
It definitely doesn't seem that the conditions through that process is gonna benefit African people at all. If anything, it may lead to things being worse because of the miseducation of our people on simplistic things like tariffs. I mean, it amazes me that most people don't understand that whole process of tariffs and how it's so damaging to the economy, and that, you know, these Yorugas are just going along with it, and some sick Negroes, too, are going along with that. But, I mean, I guess, like you always say, Baba, until we come together and bring ourselves to the point of taking care of one another and do it for ourselves, we're just going to be in this sick, twisted situation. And unfortunately, you know, thank God we have people like you who's trying to educate the babies, because sad to say, the majority of us in our age group and 20, 30 years younger ain't getting it like they should, and we'll see how we move forward to a progressive place of trying to reclaim our Africanness and sovereignty. And as always, Baba, it's an honor and a pleasure talking to you, my brother. It's always
good. Always good to hear your voice. You don't bring what I call the silliness. All your questions are geared toward not only receiving an intelligent answer, but making people understand they need to do something. That's something that's a major missing in a lot of speakers, a lot of the Q&A, a lot of the questions. They are not meaningless, but they don't tell people you need to do something. You're not just coming here to listen to be entertained. You're here to add on to what you're already doing or figure out what you need to do.
Well, you know, Baba, it's from spending, you know, hours trying to get through one of your books, man. You know, you one of the hardest reads out there, but you gotta persevere and keep on doing what you gotta do to get that knowledge and wisdom. You know, because like I say, I was able to be a part of the glory, which was with Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and all of them. I always feel blessed to be able to have shook their hand, hugged them, spoke with them. No, I mean, some of my fondest memories is sitting in Pam Pam listening to Dr. Ben talk that talk. You know what I mean? And I'm not just talking about the African talk. I'm talking about, you know, Dr. Ben could hang with anybody. So, you know, I'm glad to have been able to experience that. But then again, you know, I ain't gonna lie to you and tell you, I ain't disappointed in a lot of ways about where we are at now. But I understand that the Yoruba had to do his job to cut us off at, or try to cut us off at our knees to keep us moving forward. And then what he didn't do, he didn't stop men like you and others who are trying to continue the work. And hopefully before I leave this planet, I'll see that glory again. Hold up, my brother.
Hold up. Take care.
All right. Right on, Brother Jay. Appreciate you. Good afternoon. Brother Irv, how are you doing?
Baba Oshi, thank you for taking my call. And hello to your guest, Baba Varudi. Brother, listening to you just makes me smile. But it makes me smile because you're talking about a cohesive thing. In other words, when you very seldom use the word I when you speak. It's always we. It's always us. It's always organized. And when you were speaking, I was thinking about the integrationist mindset that a lot of our people have. When you have an integrationist mindset, you can't see any further than that allows you to. It doesn't allow you to see a culture. It doesn't allow you to see an African mindset, is what I'm trying to say. And politics for Irugu is not tomorrow. Politics for Irugu is ongoing. This didn't start yesterday. These people were putting her and grooming her and grooming Obama way before most American Africans even understood what the game. This the dog and pony show didn't start yet. It's not going to be tomorrow. It's right. Ongoing.
Yes.
We are living in someone else's culture, which has the root word of cult. So that's they have a cult mindset. In other words, if you see a cult, it looks crazy to you. Man, that's crazy. Well, you know, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, all that comes out of cults.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, someone else's religion is another person's foolishness. You know, man, them Jehovah Witnesses, man, you know, they crazy. Well, what are you?
Mm-hmm.
I was reading Amos Wilson has a book called The African-Centered Consciousness versus the New World Order, Garveyism in the Age of Globalism. And
right.
He states in there really quickly, and I'm going to let someone else get on. He says that we have to train. He says we have to train. It didn't say we have to have a listen to this show one day and we got it and we can keep moving. We have to be consistent. And that's why shows like this and books that you write give us consistency. I can go to your book when I feel confused or lost, and I can read and get clarity because the words never change in your book. See, and that's consistency. And I think that you and Baba Oshi are slowly pulling back these covers on what Irugu was doing. And it for people who are seeking this, because the reason I'm conscious, because I went looking for it, because I know about Burundi, it has to be more than what they're giving me right now. A Kamala and a Barack Obama and a Donald Trump. It has to be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And what your book does is makes me think it out for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And think. And you know, and you notice I keep saying the word think. And that's something that a lot of people, for some reason, we've fallen into Arugo's mindset. I don't want to think. Please tell me what to think. The View and CNN and all these. I never see Dr. Clark on TV. I never see Garvey on this television. Why is that? These people don't exist. But I can see Hitler every day on the Hitler Channel, on the History Channel, on the Hitler Channel.
That's for sure.
So no, brother, I love what you're doing. If my brother's in trouble, I'm in trouble. We're somewhat of a trouble. But believe me, brother, I'm optimistic. Black people, American Africans, it's hard for me to get out of that habit. They've come over here in the hull of a ship.
Mm-hmm.
And look what we have accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And they have seen nothing yet. Marcus Garvey had it right. He said, rise, you mighty race. And he was absolutely correct. Because they can't, no matter what they do, brother, they just can't keep us down.
Yeah.
So, no, thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate listening to you. I'm going to let somebody else get on. I'm sorry I didn't have a question, but I just wanted to add my little 3 cents. I got more
That's
than 2 cents.
That's all right. That might be about 3 million cents.
Right on, brother.
Thank you so much, my brother. I
definitely appreciate that thought relative to the work that is being done and how we need to think, and the fact that this is not new. They've been at it for a long time. You know, there's a reason why we are in the position that we're at, and we forget
right.
that. I hear so many folks who... Well, you know, when they're learning what it means to be African, they're mad and they're calling Europeans stupid and all the rest of it. No, they're very intelligent.
They're
very intelligent, or we wouldn't be in the position that we're in. Repeatedly, we rise, they try to knock us down. We rise, which, of course, is one of our greater qualities, resilience, that ability to rise when we've been knocked down and to rise even better.
Yes.
It's something that you pointed out initially, which I very consciously years ago began to try to do this because it was very disturbing to me, even though I understood why, from a quote-unquote objective academic place where you're taught that you have to be, objectivity means that you separate yourself from whatever it is that you're studying so that your conclusions, your analysis appears to be more scientific. No. When I'm talking about African people, this is us, this is we. So now we have this so many folks who are writing, and again, I understand, where they're not part of the group that they're writing. They're not, you know, they don't see themselves in that way, and that allows for this separation, this distinction between whoever's writing about you and you to exist. I'm part of my people.
Right.
I talked about that in Identity and Higher Ground, where we have to stop saying they or them or those people, like they're not us, like they're not ours. It's like it has the magnitude of what a black boy calling a white Catholic priest father does.
Right.
Power in that over you. We have to take that power back, and through language, one of the things that we need to reclaim is us as one. So somebody comes across that and they read that, even though it may not occur consciously, that's going to do something subconsciously to them. They're going to be puzzled, and that's going to cause them to think. And I don't mean to go on with this, but there's one clear example of just how deep this is. When I was teaching at Chicago State, I would put charts on the board, data. I did a lot of research in income and wealth differences between blacks and whites. But everywhere you go in the magazines, you see the first column is white males, the second column either going to be white females or black males, and the last column is going to be black females. And, of course, that registers in our subconscious but not necessarily our conscious. So one day I put this chart on comparative wealth on the board, and I put black females first column, black males second column, white female second column, third column, and white males the last column. And they were writing down this chart, but you could see puzzlement on their faces. They knew something was wrong. They couldn't figure out what it was, but they knew that something was wrong. I did the same thing at Morehouse, and you could see the puzzlement on their face. So this is operating at an extremely deep level. This us is being separate from African people. This them, is they, is it. So that's something that we really need to work on an individual, intellectual, personal level. So I appreciate, even though everything else, but I especially appreciate the fact that you brought that up.
Thank you.
All right, Brother Irv. Thank you, my brother.
I see.
Mama Navantu, how you doing? We were talking about you.
Oh, Lord. Hope it was good.
You know it was.
Greetings, Mama.
Greetings, Baba Barudi. Good to hear you.
How you doing?
I'm good now after the festival. I'm doing
okay.
Good.
A little time to rest, recover. Was it good? Did the festival go well?
Yeah, because, you know, Brother Oshie started off right. He got them so straight from the very beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't there, but I heard it, you know.
Okay.
And the white folks were a little scared because the grounds was beautiful, you know. Unfortunately, it's not owned by us, but I'm trying to do some research to see who actually built this church back in the 1800s. because a lot of these churches were built by us. So I'm still doing the research on it. But I have a question, and it has to do with the way that we're moving with this reparations movement, with so many factors and fractions and divisions that's taking place. I just wonder if it will happen. And I know there's some young brothers and sisters, they're not waiting for it. They're buying land and building homes and what have you. And so it becomes just icing on the cake. But in the meantime, you know, there's this division that's taking place among many of our people. Really, we didn't have this kind of division back in the 60s. And it puzzles me, it bothers me with the kind of division that I see going on and how hostile these divisions can be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just having a conversation about our disagreements don't mean I have to be called a B. And that's what I had to experience a month ago at Fulton County when they were trying to decide whether this reparation was going to be lineage or was it going to be race-based. So I know that's a lot, but I just wanted to get your take on it.
I mean, to me, I'm operating under the assumption that I won't see it happen.
Okay.
I'm operating under the assumption that these divisions are going to continue to grow and that they're going to become even more mean-spirited than they are now. And like you said, they're ugly right now. But I believe, I mean, I only have two choices in my belief. One of them will lead me not to work, and the other one will lead me to continue to work even harder. And that and that is either we are not at some point in time going to come together, or there's going to be this select group among us who continues the process of us coming together until more and more of us wake up, and they will provide the leadership for us to move into the sovereignty of African people, or that these divisions are going to continue to divide us and divide us and divide us and divide us until there's nothing about each other that we know. And I have to operate on the assumption that we are intelligent enough to do this. And as long as it doesn't get lost, as long as there's one person who's moving in the correct direction, then there's a possibility. I believe it was, it's either in Nkrumah or an African proverb, and I believe it's an African proverb that says you must act as if it's impossible to fail.
Yes.
Okay. I like that quote. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, Mar, you know that I know. This is ugly. It is painful.
Yes,
watching African people online, listening to some of these podcasts, looking at some of these quotes online, the priorities of so many African people have nothing to do with anything and definitely are moving us away from what it means to be African. So that's extremely painful, and it's, it can be quite depressing from time to time. But we have to know. It's like, you know, we're the... what do you say? The motivational speakers—they tell you talk in terms of whatever it is that you want already being in existence.
I like that.
I remember being corrected by an elder at some point in time, and I'm not too sure. It might have been you, Mama Nubuntu, who told me I was being asked how we were doing in Akabin, how Inia and I were doing, and my response was, you know, we're doing all right, we're doing okay, we're making it, and I was corrected, no, we've made it, we've already won. It's just a matter of whatever things have to be done to get us there. So I don't get stopped or stumble, and I know that you don't either, but I don't get stopped or stumble when I see these situations going on, these things that are working against us, the things I won't tolerate, things I can't, you know, I won't be around. But I know that we are winning. I know that we are an extremely resilient people. I know that There are a number of us who are clear, and we're still doing the work. And as long as they're doing the work, I'm going to continue doing the work. So when I guess I can say, I'll quit when you decide to quit. I'll give up on
Ain't
this.
Ain't no quitting here. On that. You know,
so
my
I,
name
no.
is. I'm sleeping till the battle's won. That's what Uncle Wanda means. So ain't no quitting here.
I say.
So I know that the work will continue. And I know that I'm going to transition knowing that I have done the righteous work. Whether I saw the result of that immediately or the situation got worse or what have you, I know I did my part. I know that when I have to talk to the ancestors after I leave here, I won't have to make up or try to make up excuses as to why I didn't do this or didn't do that. Did everything in my power.
Mm-hmm.
And for me right now, you know, that's good enough.
Yeah.
I hear you.
It's the same
I appreciate
here.
Your response. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome, Mama. And even, like I said, even though you, I know you know, we are grateful. Any grateful for you being here, because you provided a consistent model of what it means to be African, to be involved in organizations, to motivate people to be involved in organizations, to create events for African people to be themselves at. So you have provided an enormous model in our lives in terms of the work that needs to be done, the consistency in the work that needs to be done, and to be in a position where you know what you can't correct because it's these people don't want to be African, but to work with those who do want to do this work, who do want to be who we are. So we definitely appreciate you, your presence on this planet and in our community here.
I say.
And I'm grateful for that. And I'm also grateful that my daughters are taking the baton and they are moving forward with particularly the Collard Green Festival and telling me now what to do.
There we go. You know you've done good.
That's right. That's for sure.
I'm so grateful for that, that they're moving forward. And the legacy will continue. And, you know, to live to see the legacy continue is really a bonus for me. So I thank you. And, of course, I always appreciate you and Mama Yah for the work that you continue to do nonstop. Just keep doing it. So we got to keep moving forward the best that we can and keep the seed alive. All right. Thank you.
All right, Mama Nobantu. Appreciate you, my sister. Oh, man, I tell you. I'm here. Can you hear me? Baba. I think something happened, and we'll get him back so we can close the program. I have to run. I have an appointment. So I'm going to maybe I'll have to call him.
Yeah, I don't know what went on, Baba.
Okay. Well, you're back. Well, listen,
we're back.
Yeah, we only got a few more minutes, and I have to have an appointment I got to go to. But I just want you to go ahead and wrap it up. I really have a lot of admiration and love for you and Annie and for what y'all do. To me, anybody that has made a sacrifice like that to help our people, like I said, you could have stayed at Morehouse and her at Spelman, whatever, you know, and be throwing down six. But no, you choose to work with our people. You choose to help educate young warriors. You choose to consistently put out literature that is mind altering, that gets us to really think, and more importantly, utilize that thinking into action. You know, because it's one thing to think or read, but it's more importantly to involve yourself in action to make things happen, you know, and that's what you have done. And so I admire you greatly for that, my dear brother.
And I definitely appreciate that, Baba. I guess from childhood, I've always fought for, voted, believed in the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the underdog.
Yes, we are.
Planet. Now, yeah, so for me, that it gives great joy especially when the underdog is the righteous player, the righteous character, the righteous one in the competition. And I know we are the righteous people. Unless I'm badly mistaken, and then I guess I'll find out when I transition, but unless I'm badly mistaken, our people were of Maat. And unless I'm wrong about the universe, then the universe is going to correct itself. And, of course, we're part and parcel of the universe, but it's going to correct itself. There's no way that evil and chaos, noise and confusion, as our ancestors would say, can remain in charge of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. So I don't want to be, if I can talk in these terms, I don't want to be on the wrong side when I transition, because I went and followed the way and the will of our lost enemies, because mm-hmm. it was easier. You know, we have you, Mama Nabatu, Inya, all of us,
yeah,
had choices, and we made the righteous choice. We did mm-hmm. what was right. I can go to sleep at night with peace,
mm-hmm.
knowing that we're doing mm-hmm. what we're supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. and that the ancestors and the children, those yet to come seven generations down the road, mm-hmm. they appreciate that. They will benefit from that. Mm-hmm. What you have created here. Baba, and I know that everyone in the audience, if they don't know, they should know, what you have created in the midst of this insanity, in the midst of everything moving against you in this reality, to make African people more aware of who we are, our power, our vision, our responsibility to each other, that needs to be seriously applauded. Kudos.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do.
On that.
Because I appreciate
I'm
you. Because
I'm very glad and very proud to, you know, be standing on the front line with you.
That's right. Shoulder to shoulder, dear brother.
Yeah, so for me, closing remarks, people need to take the time to do whatever it is that they need to do to make sure that your work continues. They need to make sure that they take the time to deliver the word, to spread the word to anybody who has the ability to understand what's going on, that they need to be listening to what you're doing now, and they need to go back, dig into the archives, and pull out the ideas and information. You know, let that be your classroom. Let the archives that you have created, let them be the classroom.
Yep.
For a while.
All right.
And while at the same time understanding those archives of things that we're supposed to act on.
I say. Thank you, Baba. Appreciate you so much.
I say.
We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Abibi Vahardie. Abibi Vahardie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. Hope to see you on Wednesday. All right.
Great show, Baba Osho. All right.